All right, here we are, lawyer talk, off the record, on the air, talking guns and drugs. What could be more exciting than guns and drugs? Probably not this, but anyway, listen anyway, you might learn something. Or maybe not, who knows. I'm going to talk about the case of United States versus Hemani, H-E-M-A-N-I. I usually don't geek out like this too much, but this is about guns and drugs. You know, people are sort of interested in that. At any rate, it was a recent United States Supreme Court case decided on March 2nd, 2026. Google it. It's all there. And basically, at issue there, actually, let me just read it because it's such a great introduction to the case. See, this is good writing. If I had a law student here, again, I don't have my resident law student with me today. But anyway, this is good writing. Al Hemani uses marijuana a few times a week. And this is the first paragraph of the case. Al Hemani uses marijuana a few times a week. That fact alone, the government says, means he is automatically banned from possessing a firearm under federal law. And because Mr. Hemani admits he owns a gun despite this ban, the government now seeks to prosecute him, imprison him for up to 15 years, and disarm him for life. This case poses the question whether the government's prosecution of Mr. Hemani is consistent with the Second Amendment. I mean, look, forget about the decision for a second, but if I could just frame this writing and say to every first-year law student, write like this, or actually anybody, write like this. Not very many big words other than Hemani's name, which is sort of confusing, or is not a common name. But for the most part, this is simple, succinct, and everybody knows what we're about to talk about. Write like this. I would strive to write like this. Anyway, the case addresses, back to the facts, the case addresses a situation where Hemani is being prosecuted under the Federal Gun Control Act, and that prohibits various categories of people from possessing guns. And those are all listed, by the way, if you want to geek out with me, it's at 18 United States Code, Section 922G. And you might imagine what's on that list. You got folks who have prior crimes, who have felony convictions punishable by more than a year in jail or a year and a day. People who are fugitive from justice, those convicted of domestic violence. That's a big one. Everybody hates that one. But this case concerns something a little different. Under its terms, anyone who is, quote, an unlawful user of, end quote, or addicted to a controlled substance is automatically banned from possessing guns. Who's the most recent? First of all, by the way, I've been practicing law for 30 some odd years. You don't see too many of these cases. In fact, I can't remember if I've ever seen one of these cases. But Hunter Biden, I think, got prosecuted or at least investigated for this. And remember, he filled out a form. Anybody who's gone to the gun shop and filled out a form and you say, I don't use unlawful drugs, whether you lied, told the truth or whatever, if you clicked yes, I unlawfully use drugs, you couldn't buy a gun. So that is the immediate problem that is sort of framing this problem in a way that anybody who's bought a gun would understand. So if you've got a medical marijuana card and you say, wait a minute, is it lawful? Because in the state, it's lawful where I'm using it, but the feds say it's still a crime, even though they've reduced it from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2. Am I an unlawful drug user? Well, maybe, maybe not. I'm going to check the box or I'm not going to check the box. You can see where the conundrum is. And that's why the U.S. Supreme Court took the case, I suspect. Because, by the way, you know, I've tried a couple times getting the U.S. Supreme Court. They don't just take every case. They find the cases that are going to have some answer a bigger question or try to address other concerns that they're interested in addressing as the law moves forward. Anyway, back in other cases, starting with D.C. versus Heller, and then under New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, the Supreme Court has established some ground rules about the Second Amendment. First, the Second Amendment's an individual right. We get it. It's ours. We have it individually. And it was sort of groundbreaking at the time. Secondly, Bruin says, look, we're not going to look at the court has changed how it evaluates laws that impact the Second Amendment. When I came through law school, we had basically three standards of review. You had strict scrutiny, intermediate scrutiny, and rational basis. Rational basis is if anybody could come up with a halfway decent reason for this law, well, then it's okay. Intermediate scrutiny, it's too confusing to talk about. Strict scrutiny, meaning it doesn't matter for what we're talking about. Strict scrutiny meant you had to have a really damn good reason, a really compelling government interest in the most narrowly drawn statutory regulatory scheme. So it really had to be a really good important interest, and you couldn't do any more than was surgically necessary to address that interest. And almost nothing passes strict scrutiny. And strict scrutiny was almost always applied to any law that that would impact somebody's individual constitutional rights. But the Supreme Court says, no, we're not going to do that anymore. What we're going to do now is look at the history, text, and tradition of the amendment and go back historically and say, all right, what did we really mean when we created this amendment? What was really going on? And under that framework, the court analyzes Hamani's case. So it was now incumbent upon the government, the prosecutors, to say, well, you know, let's go back in history and look for some parallels here. And they pointed to some vagrancy laws, habitual drunkenness laws, you know, the town drunk or the town fool that was always wasted. And the prosecutor argued, well, look, you know, we've always prosecuted these people and we've always sort of impinged upon their liberty a little bit by locking them up or doing other things. So that's the history, text, and tradition we're pointing at. The other side saying, well, hold on a second. You know, these, everybody knows a habitual drunk is a habitual drunk. They're always drunk. And even if you were going to lock them up or do anything, you would have to give them some sort of advance notice of that. You would arrest them, take them to court, and there'd be some findings. That's not the same at all. And by the way, we're talking about marijuana, which is, I guess, while the case was pending, I don't want to say declassified, but moved from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2 controlled substance. So even the feds are saying, wait a minute, we're not going to treat marijuana quite the same as we used to. And even the Department of Justice at some point issued, they have these internal edicts or rules where they say, look, don't prosecute those cases. We're not going to focus on marijuana cases so much anymore. So even the federal government is admitting, the court points out, to some extent, marijuana is not the same as we used to think it was. So we're not treating it as these dangerous things. So the court essentially rejects the claim of the government that there's a history, text, and tradition of similar regulations preventing people from owning guns. And, you know, in doing that, they say, look, we don't see any reason why Hamani himself should be precluded from possessing or owning a firearm like he is here. You know, I think there's all sorts of reasons for this, and I think there's good reasons for it. Let me get to where I wanted to be here. Basically, what the government is saying, or what the court is saying, is this. Look, under these particular facts, under these particular circumstances, in this case, we have a guy, Hamani, who the police knock on his door, they come in, and they say, look, we're investigating. Hamani says, yeah, I have marijuana here and I have guns here. They weren't used together. In other words, he wasn't unlawfully trafficking in marijuana and using a gun to protect his trafficking operation. He was maybe a daily or every other daily user of marijuana. There was no accusation that he was using the guns while high on marijuana. There was nothing like that. This is the unicorn case to raise this issue. So the question is, just by virtue of the fact that he used marijuana, a drug that is permitted by, I forget how many states now, either medically or recreationally, and almost over the mountain for the feds, does that mean we're going to strip him of his constitutional right, his individual constitutional right forever to own a gun? And by the way, maybe put him in a federal penitentiary because he was doing this. And the court says, no, we're not going to do it. As applied here, as applied to this guy in these facts, this statutory scheme is unconstitutional under the history, text, and tradition analysis. Now, what does this mean going forward? I think the court is clear to say, here's what it said. In saying this much, we do not question that sometimes an individual's unlawful use of marijuana or any other controlled substance may render him a danger to others. But again, the government disclaims the need to show anything like that in this case. Instead, it asks us to conclude that anyone who regularly uses marijuana is categorically violent and dangerous without further showing, all based on little or more than its current say-so, one at odds with its own regulatory action, and affording the government that kind of broad power to designate any group as dangerous and thereby disqualify its members from having a gun would risk allowing it to quickly swallow the Second Amendment, great quote. So in this case, they're not going to do it. Now, they do admit, they do say, they acknowledge this is a narrow decision. In other words, they're not going to address efforts to ban addicts. That's a different story. So if you are addicted to, say, heroin, and you're habitually in the heroin clinic or whatever it is, they're not saying that that person can't, or the government couldn't preclude that person from having a gun or prosecute somebody under the statute for having a gun in that scenario. They're not even going to, they say this, we don't even address whether the government could bring a prosecution under the statute accompanied by an individualized proof that the defendant's use of marijuana or any other drug renders him a danger to himself or others. So in other words, if there had been a little bit more here where the government said, look, this guy's using marijuana and guns at the same time, and he's a danger to others, and he's addicted or whatever, the court might even acknowledge in that situation, or I'm going to put it this way, the court's not saying in that situation the government would be precluded just because of this case from prosecuting that person. So for now, if according to the Supreme Court, if you have, if you are an occasional user of marijuana like Mr. Hamani was, and you have a gun, the government can't prosecute you, at least not constitutionally, without violating your Second Amendment under this statute. So look, if you got more questions, I can do a bigger, a deeper breakdown. I try to keep these somewhat simple, even though it gets confusing. I'm happy to do it. There's some other issues about this that might come up. You know, what is a dangerous drug, or what is an, you know, you get into some of these what we'll call vagueness laws where the statute's not exactly clear what it's asking or what it's preventing, but the court doesn't take that on. Maybe it will soon. Anyway, all right, you got questions, you got comments, you got concerns, send me a comment in the socials or go to lawyertalkpodcast.com and shoot me a question there. By the way, we're sponsored by Circle 270 Media. Phenomenal. If you've got a podcast that you want, if you're in the Central Ohio area, even nationally, great podcast consultant, check out Circle 270 Media. Brett over there will take care of you.